What kind of constitution does the United States have? Randy Barnett argues in his new book, Our Republican Constitution, that we, the people, is a collection of individuals and not a collective. Barnett spoke at the Cato Institute in April.
At the conclusion of the Philadelphia Convention, anxious citizens gathered outside Independence Hall to learn just what had been produced behind closed doors. The convention had been governed entirely in secret. It is said that as Benjamin Franklin left the building, a woman in the crowd called out to him, "Well, doctor, what have we got? A republic or a monarchy?" And Franklin is said to have responded, "A republic, madam, if you can keep it." But while the new form of government devised in Philadelphia was not a monarchy, neither was it democratic. Yet Franklin still called it a republic. That's because the meaning of that term, republic, or republican, had just been changed by the men inside the building from which Franklin was leaving. A republican constitution was no longer a democratic constitution, if it ever truly had been. In my book, Our Republican Constitution, I explain how these two fundamentally divergent views of the Constitution divide us even today. I call these divergent views the Democratic Constitution and the Republican Constitution, but I don't intend these labels to be partisan. There are political conservatives who hew to some aspect of the Democratic Constitution and some progressives who adopt aspects of the Republican one. Many people, perhaps most people, flit between conceptions depending on which happens to conform to the results they like on a particular issue. I contend that what divides those who adhere to a democratic constitution from those who favor a republican constitution are two fundamentally inconsistent visions of we the people, the first three words of the Constitution, that lead to two radically different conceptions of popular sovereignty. Those who adhere to a democratic constitution hold a different conception of we the people and popular sovereignty than those who adhere to a republican one. A democratic constitution views we the people as a group. We the people as a group. And the purpose of a constitution is to empower the majority of the people to rule. The idea of we the people as a group is we the people must rule as a group, and the only way the people can rule as a group is for a majority to rule. How else are they going to do it? And therefore, the purpose of the Constitution is to set up a democratic mechanism to express the will of the people. It makes perfect sense. In this scheme, unelected judges are problematic because they are thought to thwart the will of the people as reflected in their legislatures. Under a democratic constitution, therefore, the will of the majority should generally prevail. In contrast, a republican constitution views we the people as individuals. As the Declaration of Independence affirmed, we the people are endowed with certain inalienable rights, among which are the individual rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Then the next sentence of the Declaration, and I spend chapter one entirely on the Declaration of Independence, the next sentence of the Declaration says that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Not all powers, not unlimited powers, but their just powers are what they derive from the consent of the governed. But the purpose of government is to secure the individual rights that the previous sentence had just referred to, the rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So in short, under the Republican Constitution, first come rights, and then comes governments to secure the pre-existing rights of we the people as individuals. And then, to ensure that government is held to its just powers, the Constitution is put in writing, such as this, to provide the law that governs those who govern us. We are all governed by laws that are made by governmental agencies, but this is the law that governs those who govern us. Now, as I explain in several chapters of Our Republican Constitution, the Constitution secures these rights primarily in two ways. First, by means of federalism, in which the federal government is limited to its enumerated powers, while allowing 50 states to adopt a diversity of social and economic regulations. And second, by a separation of powers in which the national powers to make, execute, and enforce the laws are placed in separate hands. But in addition, judges too are servants of the people, and they have a duty to keep legislators within what the Declaration calls their just powers by invalidating irrational and arbitrary laws. After all, we the people cannot be presumed to have consented to delegate to our servants in the legislature the power to arbitrarily or irrationally restrict the exercise of our pre-existing rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The death of Justice Antonin Scalia, combined with Senate Republicans' refusal to consent to any nominee until after November, has raised the stakes on an issue that should always be at the forefront of any presidential campaign, but usually isn't, and that is the future of the Supreme Court and our Constitution. As a result of his death, selecting the next justice is already a prime topic of the ongoing presidential contest. But now is the time to be clear about the nature of the choice we face. Most today assume that the current divide on the court is political, in the sense that the left side favors progressive outcomes while the right side favors conservative ones. But that's not truly the case. For example, when I argued the case of Gonzalez versus Raich before the Supreme Court in 2004, one might have supposed that the left side of the court would have favored my clients who sought to use medical marijuana as authorized by California law, while the right side of the court would have voted against so liberal a drug policy. Yet, Chief Justice Rehnquist and Justices Thomas and O'Connor sided with us, while the four most progressive justices stood in opposition. And then we lost 6-3 when Justices Scalia and Kennedy joined the ranks of the progressives. What was at stake for both sides, however, was not a policy dispute over marijuana, but a difference over constitutional principle. In particular, a principled disagreement over the sort of constitution we have and the proper role of judges in enforcing it. Do we have a democratic constitution in which the rule of the majority takes priority unless expressly prohibited? If so, judges should generally defer to the will of we the people as expressed by their representatives. Or do we have a republican constitution in which the rights of we the people take priority over the decisions of their servants in the legislature? And if so, judges have a duty to ensure that the servants of we the people remain within the constitutional limits on their powers. In Raich, the liberal justices put their principled commitment to majoritarian rule at the national level above their compassion for the sick, the suffering, and the dying. Kind of have to admire them for that. Conversely, the three conservative dissenters put their principled commitment to constitutionally limited federal power above their abhorrence of drugs. Now, we cannot be sure why Justice Kennedy joined the liberals, but Justice Scalia made his reasons clear in his separate concurring opinion in Raich. Under the necessary and proper clause, he wrote, the court must defer to Congress's judgment that it was essential to reach homegrown and consumed marijuana to enforce its ban on the interstate trade. In this way, did Justice Scalia adhere to the central tenet of the Democratic Constitution, judges should defer to the majority of legislatures. In short, in Raich, 6 of 9 justices exercised judicial restraint in deferring to the democratic will of Congress when it came to enforcing the scope of Congress's power under the Commerce and Necessary and Proper Clauses. But 3 justices were prepared to draw a line at federal power to prevent citizens from producing and consuming a good on their own property, leaving the regulation of such activities to the states. So in Raich, 6 justices hewed to the Democratic Constitution, while 3 were prepared to enforce the text of the Republican Constitution.